As a native Californian living in Zurich since 20 years, she is the wife and mother of two young children and an ice hockey coach for a local hockey school. Jennifer Tam worked globally for multinational companies such as Zurich Insurance, UBS, and Thomson Reuters at the intersection of digital transformation, risk management, and as a global executive and strategist with 20 years at the intersection of people, risk, digital transformation, and ethical governance, helping leadership teams build the organizational resilience needed to scale with integrity. Jennifer's mission is to create a healthy and high-performing professional environment. As the founder of Zest Life, she provides an innovative automated solution for corporate well-being, governance, and regulatory reporting to create an environment for people that feel less stressed, more in balance, connected, and in control of their lives. Jennifer, thank you so much for dropping by on such a spontaneous, quick note. And I would love to hear what's going on in your world at the moment, because we already had a podcast. You're becoming a regular, so to speak. So maybe you can tell us, I already know you quite well, your background, but maybe you can tell our audience what, as you are a CEO and founder of Zest Life, what Zest Life is doing.
Thanks for having me here. I appreciate the invitation, and it's always nice to see you. So there's a lot of stuff going on right now. So it's wonderful to have the opportunity to speak with you and your guests. And we have a lot of things going on with Zest Life. So Zest Life was founded because I felt, as a risk manager in the corporate environment, we needed to take a structured approach to how we looked at the employee well-being and all the stress-related issues that were happening over and over again in the corporations that I was working with. So I set out to found an automated way that was ethical. It didn't monitor employees. It really protected the privacy of an individual, especially leadership and employees alike. And that gave the structured reporting capabilities and requirements that corporations need, all the numbers, right? So I set out to build that, which I've been doing for the last few years. I have a good team behind me now that helps me execute, because I am quite busy juggling regular life, being a mom and a wife, and trying to take care of myself at the same time, which is not always easy.
So Jennifer, you built a successful company. At the same time, you have two kids, manage family life. How do you manage these both worlds? Must be pretty exciting and tough, and there's always something going on.
There's always something going on. There's always something going on, and it is tough. It's not always easy. Some days are better than others. The morning rush to get everybody out the door to school is always stressful. And also when they come home and it's dinner time, I think that's always a peak time. How I manage, I've got a great husband who also has his own company, and so it's allowed us to have some flexibility, and we just try to support each other as best as possible. And I thank the Lord that I have really nice kids that help us in the process, and so they're not too bad themselves.
So time management probably is pretty good in your household.
I was actually recognizing that it was always a crescendo of activity and craziness around dinner time. So I was just trying to focus on the times during the day that were really stressful, and how it was difficult for us to balance getting our work done and then getting kids fed and, you know, bathed and off to bed and so forth. And or then in the morning time, really getting everybody ready for school and getting us ready for work. Those were like the two times during the day. So I just focused in on those and said, okay, how can we manage and support each other? What are our schedules? And have regular check-ins with my husband on what's working, what's not.
Jennifer, I would like to talk about also the issues that you address with Zest Life, the health-related issues. Can you talk about what's going on in the corporations in terms of health and well-being of employees? What are the illnesses or diseases that concern people? Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
So in terms of illnesses and diseases, there are many. So it would probably be challenging for me to go into any one specifically. But if I were to give some general numbers out here that are overwhelming, so the WHO has announced that just over 80% of the employee population has challenges with mental health. This is a massive problem. I know here in the country we live in, Switzerland, there is a tremendous growing proportion of insurance claims from companies that have to do with employee mental health. And in general, the numbers are staggering. So it is estimated to be over $1 trillion per year globally for corporations collectively around all the stress well-being related incidents in the workplace. So if you want to look at anything from absenteeism, so that's people not showing up to work for whatever reason that might be, to presenteeism, which is the word around describing people showing up for work, but they're not really performing at their best, and they might just kind of be there. They're just taking up space, and they're doing the best that they can, but for whatever reason, it's just not top performance at that particular time. So these are some struggles that we really have as a society. And if you throw in the topic of longevity, so then now we have a real systemic system that needs to be approached and looked at differently than maybe not just yoga at lunchtime. Maybe we need to have some structured programs and frameworks around this to be able to accommodate for longer lives, as well as more complicated and some challenges we have around mental health, particularly after pandemic.
So what are we talking about? What kind of diseases and illnesses are we talking about? Depression? Well, can you name some of the diseases?
There are two specific gold standard assessments at the moment that are around depression and anxiety. So those assessments are typically used. We've woven in those principles also in the application we built with Says Life. And there's other well-being and therapy employee assistance programs that use these assessments as well. So specifically around depression and anxiety. And then there's a whole host of other things that get looked at. But the important thing is, doesn't matter what challenge a person has and the opportunities that they may have for improvement, it doesn't matter what that is. What matters is that their privacy is maintained and that they don't feel exposed to their employer or their manager in any way, shape, or form, because that is something that's private to them. And so we really need to maintain the level of understanding and support that corporations do provide to employees. We need to be able to encourage the employees to take advantage of those services without feeling a loss of trust.
So they can feel safe, the relevant person or the employee.
Right.
And at the same time, let's say I'm an employee and I feel depressed and I'm looking for help. I don't need to tell my boss immediately.
You shouldn't have to. Okay. Not every company does that. But as a best practice, you shouldn't have to tell your manager or HR. You should have access to either a helpline for immediate emergency cases. You should have access to some sort of coaching or therapy program. And a lot of larger corporations offer this. And the challenge some of the smaller corporations have or businesses is that there's just not really enough resources to be able to provide that to your company and your employees. So you have to look at other ways to be able to manage a better well-being and perspective for the employees.
So the companies lose a lot of money as a result of these illnesses through absenteeism and how did you call it?
Presenteeism.
Presenteeism. So basically you go to the workplace, but you're basically just a zombie or you shut off, basically, and are not a performer anymore.
Just not necessarily performing at your best.
At your best.
Right. But there's also stress-related incidents. So there's hazard risks exist. So slip and fall type of accidents.
Happens as well.
It could be exacerbated because people are not feeling that great that day, right? So their mind is somewhere else. You know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be because of a controlled work environment. It could be something that happened outside of work. So that's why it's important to keep any sort of structured evaluation for the employees or around their well-being and a holistic perspective of their well-being private because it might not have anything to do with work.
And how does CES Life help the corporation or the employees to prevent those kind of situations?
Good question. So we are not a diagnostic tool to give a specific reason why a person is not performing well. And we certainly don't have any sort of structure where a boss, a manager, HR, board of directors would ever find out what an individual's responses are. So we keep a no trust policy built in our software system so everyone is very safe and the reports are individual. And then and this blueprint around holistic life balance is focused on really encouraging an individual to use the existing resources around coaching and employee assistance programs. We want to reduce the risk for the organization. And so what that means is estimating the amount of risk that they have, encouraging people to understand where they stand at that particular day, which might change over time, right? So how I am today might not be how I am 3 months from now or 6 months from now. So in regular intervals, you can always do these check-ins. And it gives feedback privately to the person and encourages them to utilize the employee assistance programs that are in place. And then the other blueprint we have is really around the structured risk management of identifying what are all the unknowns happening in your workplace? What don't you know about? How can we help focus on the problem and not a person? So you don't want to point blame on someone. You want to be able to give leadership, particularly the comfort level that by looking at well-being and creating a structured framework around it that includes double materiality, which is how does it impact our operations and how does it impact us financially? It gives them the safety that when they have this program inside their office and looking at their department, it's not going to be a blame game. And a lot of leadership need to be aware of that, particularly in large corporates. So,
yeah, especially if you in upper management, you also don't want to show weaknesses.
Right.
You know, it's a power game.
Right.
So they're also important that the top management feels safe.
Yes.
If they don't want to expose themselves.
Yes.
To the power politics, then.
Exactly. So our second blueprint that we have in our software really focuses on the framework, a risk management framework for a corporation, maintains the focus on the problems, the issues that you have, and identifying the opportunities. So it's a great workflow that we think that's scalable for, you know, across large global organizations and even through your supply chain. And the important point around the leadership that you brought up is that leadership should not be ignored when it comes to well-being. And that's the whole reason, actually, I started CES Life. And it shouldn't be underestimated that just because they might earn a high salary, that they feel good on the inside. And through a lot of the research that we were doing in the early days, I found that almost every single executive that I was interviewing felt lonely to a certain degree, right? Mm. And so, as you said, they can never really show any weaknesses, which is sad because I came from a very, you know, athletic, sporty background, right? And I always thought, okay, top performing teams work well together. They're never pitted against each other. So then when I graduated university and I went into a corporate environment, I was looking at my executive team thinking, why are they pitted against each other? Why do they feel that they need to protect each other, you know, for themselves from each other? And I just never understood that. And I think it's getting a little better now in terms of leadership development, but the well-being of a leader should not be ignored. And so our program encourages leadership participation. It's not just for the employees, it's also for the leaders. Mm-hmm. So they can participate, so they can be heard and understood without calling them out and without putting them in a spotlight for any sort of inconsistencies or opportunities for improvement.
Yeah, as you said, you know, like it's lonely at the top, and just because you make a lot of money doesn't make you're super happy all the time. And yourself, you experience also in your career when top management self-harmed themselves.
Right.
So maybe was that also something that inspired you to found Says Life?
Absolutely. So as I said, one of the triggers that helped me get motivated to create this company and build a product like Says Life, mm-hmm. We had some incidents in my previous employer where sadly the CEO and our CFO both committed suicide. And suicide numbers and mental health are really coming to the forefront and are getting much more acknowledgement nowadays, I think. Men are, you know, typically need to be very tough and they can never talk about it, but there's some great organizations now really bringing men's health to the forefront. And so when that happened, I thought it was my duty as a risk manager to really do a deeper dive into this particular area of people risk management. And so I've been working in this field for just over 6 years now. I did my dissertation on executive level stress, and I really hope that the learnings that I took through that research, the observations that I've had in my corporate experience have helped parlay the way we approach protecting employees, enabling leaders to look after their people, and giving the corporation all their corporate level framework and governance mm-hmm. that's required to manage well-being in a strategic capacity.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, do you think, in general speaking, suicide is still taboo in our society?
In some societies, mm-hmm. not in all.
So you mean certain countries?
Certain countries, right. Mm. So it just depends on what country and culture you're in. Mm. I think in North America, Western Europe, Australia, I think they do a good job right now at bringing men's health into the limelight as of late. In the last few years, I think I've seen a number of organizations really start and really push that agenda forward, which is, it's really necessary. And as I said earlier, you know, over 80% of the workforce is saying they have mental health issues post-pandemic. Mm. So that's not all coming from women, it's also coming from men, so we shouldn't ignore it. And so I really applaud some of these male-focused organizations bringing men's health into the limelight. Mm.
Jennifer, I also would like to know, is there a certain, let's say, breaking point that leaders reach that, like an early indicator that you see or you can see that a leader approaches in an organization? Are there certain indicators for this breaking point?
It's a very good question and a delicate answer. Mm. So there is some technology that exists that compile various different parametrics. Parametrics is a fancy word for different data points, right? Different pieces of information. And they might gather that anywhere from your credit card receipts to what you're doing on social media. You could be monitored how you type on a keyboard, how you move your mouse. Your eyes can be viewed when you're doing videos. So, you know, the dilation of your pupil and so forth. There's a lot of technology that actually provide data points for what's called predictive analytics and can give leading indicators or indicators around behavioral risk, right? Certain data points have always been used, for example, with life insurance. And given the state of the world today and different various components, the data points for life insurance models change and so forth. And we have taken the position that we didn't want to use predictive analytics. We're not an insurance company and we're not pricing insurance. We're not a broker either. Mm-hmm. So the job of predicting someone's behavior or someone's mental health is something that we didn't want to do. We wanted to have something that we wanted to have a software product that gave a sense of trust to people and to individuals in a working environment that wasn't requiring all of these data points to be brought together mm-hmm. to predict what you're going mm-hmm. to do tomorrow. We didn't want that. We wanted to be able to give guidance to people, to give them encouragement to reach out for support mm-hmm. if they need it. And we wanted to have a structured risk management program mm-hmm. for the corporate entity to be able to strategically manage well-being risk in the organization, but not have to pinpoint specific behavioral predictions, and giving them a prevention focus in terms of how they plan their actions and their programs for the year. Right? So yes, there are predictive indicators. So someone's going to be XY percentage more inclined for burnout, right? And then but they landed on that because they looked at all these different data points and then did some prediction analysis around it. But it's a little like that movie Minority Report, right? So they can predict this behavior, but at the end of the day, is that person going to do it or not? Is a different story. And so we didn't feel that predictive analytics to define if someone was going to be XYZ was the way that we wanted to shape our solution.
And for whom, Jennifer, is the product? What kind of companies is the product interesting? Is it multinationals, medium-sized companies, also scale-up, startups? Can you elaborate on that one a little bit?
It's interesting, I think, for any organization that has people in it.
Okay.
I mean, so people issues yeah. are really the core root cause mm-hmm. of all other problems that mm-hmm. you could have mm-hmm. in your company. And I always said when I went into risk management from finance and IT, I always thought that risks and understanding your risks would actually help you be successful because and should be very close to the CEO, you know, whoever's doing business development should be very close to these topics because you want, in order to succeed, you want to know what's going to stop you and then you want to know how to go around it, go under it, go over it, right? And so I think by understanding some prevention tactics around these people topics that really impact everything that happens in your company, you can really move the needle on improving your business performance.
So how big do you think is the awareness at the moment in the market with corporations in terms of mental awareness of their employees? I mean, do you think like... from a scale from 0 to 10, is it a 0.5 or is it, where do you think it is?
Like, oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Of knowing that there's issues?
Yeah, or let's say motivation also to solve those kind of issues. I mean,
sadly, I think most companies right now are understanding that the regulators are mm-hmm. going to require them to provide evidence mm-hmm. of what they are doing mm-hmm. to prevent and structure the management of mm-hmm. well-being. And that's increasing the amount of pressure on leadership. But I do believe, and more sadly, that leadership is still in a position right now where they are either afraid to know what's going on, or they are mistaken and they feel that if they don't know, they are not legally liable to do anything about it. And that's mm-hmm. false. Mm-hmm. So raising your hands and saying, I didn't know there was a problem, isn't actually an answer anymore. Mm-hmm.
So there's room for creating more awareness also.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I touched on this before around getting leaders mm-hmm. to feel safe mm-hmm. to and have a structured program around well-being and understanding mm-hmm. what they don't know mm-hmm. is going on in their workplace or outside of the workplace, or just understanding their workforce better. Mm-hmm. How enable them to take care of their people and mm-hmm. look after their people better. Because most of them do. Most leaders want to take care of their people, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And so giving them and enabling them to feel safe and feel comfortable, potentially pointing out the areas that have higher risk or lower risk and how much does that look like, and giving them, the data that they need to make decisions is important. But putting them in a place where they're accepting what they're hearing is a little bit of an art form. Mm.
And do you think there are also people who abuse the whole mental well-being issues, like they carried like a badge of honor if they got diagnosed, for example? I don't know, I'm depressed, I'm officially depressed, it's Monday, I'm depressed, you know, some people like that. It's Monday morning,
it's Sunday night, I have a stomachache.
I have a hangover and I'm depressed, you know. Do you think that people also abuse that? Maybe in the whole evolution of the topic?
I don't have statistics on that off the top of my head, but I think that's part of the risks that you have, and you need to identify it. So that's the question. Does your company have a risk that people are calling in sick when they're actually not? You probably want to know that and why, you know, and then and doing something about it, so you don't have to take a reactive approach. Take a preventative approach. Understand, oh yeah, okay, well, 60% of the people that call in sick, for example, are not, you know, really sick. I don't know what that number might be, but maybe that's something that they want to know. And so, and sticking your head in the sand and pretending that it doesn't exist isn't going to solve the problem.
Yeah, you just sold me now on the product, you know. So, yeah, Jennifer, thank you so much for dropping by. It was really a pleasure. Wish you all the best, success, and nothing less. And hopefully, see you soon.
Thank you. I love being here, and I look forward to seeing you again.